All right, is that it?
Yep.
All right, Mr. Technology here. I was raised in an unchurched environment and eventually began to think about God and read the Bible during my teenage years and was invited to a Southern Baptist congregation, eventually became a member, went into Southern Baptist ministry, was ordained, and for 5 years worked, and most of my work was in Magnolia, Arkansas. Side by side sat two student centers. One was a Baptist student union affiliated with the Southern Baptist Convention, and the other was a student center run by Churches of Christ, or I should say one Church of Christ in the area. And for my 4 years of college, I also was a pastor of a Baptist church there in Magnolia, one that came to see a lot of growth before all was said and done. But as I started my freshman year, I was asked, having been a young youth minister in Texarkana, I was asked to sort of serve as the assistant to the director of the Baptist Student Center there. I lived in the building, cleaned the building, helped do whatever needed to be done, included opening the building at 6, closing at 11, help with the programs, etc. And during those 4 years there, in a very real way, I came to faith. Without the work of that student center, I would not be here today. There's no doubt about it. And on this campus, there were 2,100 students. It was a small school. And out of those 2,100 students, about 325 were active members of the Baptist Student Union. Now, that's a pretty big percentage there. Now, on the other hand, after I graduated school, I decided to make a change and came into Churches of Christ. And lo and behold, oddly enough, for a short time, I lived in that student center, served as the assistant to the director. No, I don't, and the wheels were kind of spinning there. And did much of the same thing, worked as an associate minister with the congregation there. And for some time, I have wanted to go back and talk about those experiences, because for a couple of years after the fact, I sort of did an analysis of both student centers, everything from what they taught, how they did outreach, how they did service, how they did their worship, the basic philosophy, the involvement, and there's a very sharp contrast. Now, I said about 325 active members out of a student body of 2,100 were involved there at the Baptist Student Center, but at the Church of Christ Student Center, there were a handful of people. There were a handful of people. And I noticed a lot of students would come from area churches, and they may come once, and they never come back. They never really get involved. And whereas on the one hand, for the university, that group of 325 students, I would say served as a conscience for the school. They were very involved. The school looked at that group as an asset, because anytime they wanted to promote some sort of program or event, if they could get the Baptist Student Center behind it, and for them to promote it, they would have a good core group of people involved with it. Well, anyway, this contrast really led to a lot of passion of mine through the years that I really never addressed. And so I'm really appreciative of the opportunity to get to do that. Now, before I go on, out of that 325, out of those 325 students, 63 went on to full-time ministry in Southern Baptist churches or others. That means after they finished their degree, 63 of those went to seminary and then wound up in some full-time ministry. That's of that four-year window, and it's truly amazing. The leader of that student center is a man named Lynn Lloyd, who now leads a student center at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. And he's a great, great resource from which we should draw, a very good and godly man. The importance of it, I don't have to make that case to you. You understand it. You're involved in student centers. If the world is to be changed, much of that's going to be done through our university campuses. You know, we hear the statistics about how 75% of people say truth is relative, how we have gone from a modern to a postmodern worldview. I want to tell you, we need to be able to see the open doors in that. That's not all bad. Postmodernism just means after modernism, and there's no paradigm that's been established. It's sort of a catch-all. But from a modernist perspective, faith is ultimately ruled out because what you can know is proved in the scientific laboratory. What does that do to the resurrection or inspiration? The miracles of Jesus. The problem today is not that people won't believe. It is that people will believe anything. And that shifts to a whole new matrix out of which we minister. Well, think about the potential of the college students on campus. There are close to 15 million students in colleges, universities in America, more than 500,000 international students from almost 200 nations study here as we speak. There are more than 3,500 private and public 2- and 4-year institutions in the United States, and you think about the potential of what could happen. Now back to the contrasting models. As I looked at this, I was very curious about how one that sits right next door to the other could be so very effective and the other could be completely ineffective. In fact, for years and years and years, there was a question every year whether to keep the thing going. Just sell the property and be done with it. And the compromise basically was to make the youth minister also the university minister. And so we just jammed everything together. As I look back to what they taught, as I look back to what they shared, as I look back to what they did, I noticed some very sharp contrasts, some very emergent themes in what they did. I found the one with the Baptist Student Center, was the focus was very Christ-centered, God-centered, as opposed to a model that is very much doctrinally based. And the phrase that kept coming in my mind, it was really much like a Christian Science reading room, essentially. You would go in and hear a lecture, and you would leave. And then they would lock the doors. And that lecture would be based not on a very much of a God-centered model, not a who is right things in terms of God, but a what is right thing. And of course, those studies were framed according to how we differ with other religious groups in the area. The one had a theological or a spiritual focus as opposed to merely a doctrinal focus. And really the call in the one, in my opinion, was to adopt a philosophy. Not to be molded and to have a lifestyle that honors God. The teaching methods with the Baptist Student Center was very participative. It was dialogical. Questions were encouraged. As opposed to the other side, questions were discouraged. It was a lecture, and the basic method was that of monologue. With the Baptist Student Center, their teaching methods, they were very creative. It was aimed at application. It was based on life experience. They would use things like case studies, hypothetical situations. Application was built all throughout their approach to their teaching. And questions, again, were encouraged, as opposed to the one that sat next door. Basically, that model was didactic and discursive. The call was to rote memory. The emphasis was not on lives, it was on ideas, and not people and their God. Questions were resisted. Now, when I get to the outreach model, I went through two outreach training seminars with both groups, and I'll talk about those in just a minute. We see this contrast played out further. The involvement in the one was measured by mission. It was not programmatical nearly as much as it was a lifestyle model. And in the other, it was measured by maintenance, just like many of our churches are in institutional maintenance mode. And success was measured completely by attendance at the programs. Now, that may sound very elementary, but the reason that was is that student center was run by churches that are stuck on an institutional maintenance model. And so those models come from somewhere. and it was a problem. Worship in the one was celebrative. It was culturally relevant. In the other, it was closed. It was culturally blind. It would assume that people all worship exactly the same way, regardless of age, regardless of background, regardless of ethnicity, regardless of gender. And basically what we had in the one was a white, middle-class group. What we had in the other was a thriving, ethnically diverse community of faith. And it's no accident that it happened that way. Now back to the outreach. Now in the one, in the Baptist Student Center, I found that the outreach, again, was dialogical, and there's a lot of emphasis on study of the gospel, the life of Jesus. Now, in the other, I found that it was more monological, and there was an emphasis in the letters. And over this four-year window of what they studied, it was mostly about the letters of Paul, which we do need to study the letters of Paul. But I see a very sharp contrast to Jesus being the very center. As a matter of fact, in one quarter, it was studied, basically, Paul and Jesus were sort of put on the same level. Now, all their works are inspired, don't get me wrong, we should study them. But George Hunter, a United Methodist researcher, says that the churches that are reaching and keeping secular people today focus their study on the Gospels, on a more limited part of the canon. And I think that is something that has gotten better in Churches of Christ. Along with that, in the one, there's much emphasis and much talk about our relationship with God. Now, 25 years ago back then, virtually none of that in the other student center. I believe that that has changed a great deal. And I could point to some books written by people in Churches of Christ, I think, that have helped that and emphasized that. I do believe that that has gotten better. But in the one, the focus is on life situations and applications. The other, mere doctrinal ideas and a proclamational model. And essentially, the auditorium class was imported to the student center. And it just didn't work. Now, I do see this. I do see that we are getting more diverse, and we're doing a better job of that. But I do think a problem is that we still often are importing the auditorium class to the student center. We're just changing the lecture and making the lecture better. The problem is with the lecture model, no matter how good the stuff is. And so we have to look at that. The outreach training models. A man named Milt Hughes, which was an instrumental person in student center work, Baptist student center work, did two workshops regularly all over the place for members of Baptist student unions. One was a spiritual growth workshop. And in that spiritual growth workshop, basically taught people how to walk with God. And I remember he used the illustration that I've used many times. It's a spiritual stool, three legs. For the stool to work, all three legs have to be strong. One is your personal walk with God. Second is your support group. And third is your ministry to others. And over and over and over, student center directors were asked to, as they counsel with people and serve people and teach people, they were asked to assess student spirituality to give them advice based on that model. And that's a pretty good model to go by. And so that sort of permeated that. This is what people are about. This is what the goal is. The second workshop he did was called the Share Seminar. And this is a model based on a lifestyle incarnational model of outreach. How we, through the course of relationships, influence people for God. How do we glorify God on a day-by-day basis and along the way influence the people in our circles of influence? And it's a very good workshop. And those two things permeated, all right? Now, on the other hand, I went through two training methods of training at the other student center. But let me say this. Back up 2 or 3 years, I went in the student center when I was considering making a change. And I went through one of those studies I later studied about. Well, it was not exactly that study, but this study was one offshoot of the method, etc. And essentially, you can probably recognize some of these studies. It's a trifold piece of paper, and essentially, you have a number one, and you have three or four scriptures read or printed out there, the references, and then you have two or three yes or no questions, and that's it. Now, incidentally, for people, I knew where the Bible books were. I learned them on my own, but for people who are unchurched, they don't know where those are. How long does it take to go through a trifold like that? And then, can you relegate Scripture to two yes or no questions? I don't know that I would pass that study today, and I teach in the Bible department at Harding. Some of those things were very much overly simplified. And the training was a rote script. And you know what? I've always had a streak in me that's not very nice. And so I went in there as a Baptist preacher, and it was so easy to get the guy thrown off by not following the script. It's like somebody called a telemarketer calling you on the phone and asking you a very simple question, and you give the wrong answer, and they don't know what to do. It was great. It was hilarious. My attitude wasn't that great all the time that I did that, but it's very easy. And when I would have a question, the person was trained to say, "That's a good question, but we're going to write it down and we'll cover it later." In other words, shut up. I've got some other things to talk about. Of course, we never came back to it later. And when I went through the training, that's exactly what we're trained to do. The one is people-friendly, the other is not. The one is lifestyle-oriented, the other is not. And it played out. It played out. There were very few people responding to the message in the one. There was a steady flow of people responding the other way. And allow me to say this about the outreach models. Also, the one, the Baptist Student Center model, seemed to be aimed beyond conversion. Does God have an interest in us beyond the baptistry? If He does, then we need to aim there. And yes, conversion point is a very important point that we never need to neglect, but it's only one. You aim everything at that. When they dry off, what are you going to do? Well, I'll tell you, they did nothing. Nothing, virtually, other than encourage you to show up. Encourage you to show up. That was it. The one was an extreme conversionist model. Everything aimed there. If we could just get you in the water, everything's okay. That's not true. That's not the truth. And so this played out in a very real way. I also want to say, in the seventh place, leadership development was very different. The one was all about equipping and empowering and deploying people in ministry, not in the future, but at present in that community, and involved in those churches, involved in ministering and serving people in that area right then. The other, basically, was hierarchical and institutionally closed. The church outside would appoint a director. That director may have assistant directors or whatever. And then that was pretty much it. I would say that the Baptist Student Center model did a great job of their leaders being facilitators, equippers, empowerers. But the thing was led by the students. And these students were elected to a group leadership groups. And they were out there with the people. And I would say that equipped them to be leaders of tomorrow. Eighth, there's a different philosophy about the building. In the Baptist Student Center, it was student friendly. It was everything from the furniture to what you did was laid out to be student friendly, to encourage conversations and communications, and to give the people a place to hang out. And it was a very popular hangout. From 6 in the morning till 11 at night during weekdays, and then midnight on the weekends, it was very rarely was it not full of people all over the place. People would come there to study. Many of them were not even members of the student center. But they would come and they would study, they would hang out, they would talk, they would visit, they would go out and eat, they would go out and play softball, whatever it was. On the other one, on the other hand, the building was often closed. I don't know how else to say it, But I was instructed to keep that thing locked most of the time. Why? Students leave cans and papers and bottles. On the other hand, I saw a lot of thankfulness that there were students to leave cans and papers and bottles. And most of the time, it was not available. And it was open for sanctioned programs. And that was pretty much it. And the whole point there is building a spiritual community. Hard to do that when you just ask people to show up for a Bible study. And then ninth, university relations. And this was a very interesting one to me. On the one hand, the Baptist Student Center, they were very supportive of the university and what's done. The university saw these people and the leaders as an asset. If they needed something promoted or something done, et cetera, they would call the Student Center director and ask for his help, and he would help. On the other hand, university relations at the others, they took a posture of basically being opposed to the university, that things are getting bad in the world, that part of the problem is the university, and they're getting more and more and more liberal. And so I'm sure that the phone was never picked up from the school to ask to help for anything, because all they ever heard was an opposing voice. And all that they ever heard from the school was basically when a lecturer came they didn't like, or somebody suggested some different idea, there were complaints. That does not make for a good relationship between any two entities. And then finally, tenth, the church relations. And this is one that I've spent as much thought on as anything. In the one, you may or may not be familiar with how Southern Baptists are organized. Every Southern Baptist church is autonomous. And they can give, they give to the cooperative program, they give to the local missionary alliance, national missionary alliance. They don't have to, but most of them do. And in this particular area, there would be an associational missionary, it's called, it's sort of to promote cooperation between the churches. In this one church, though there's one basic supporting church that funded most of it, and it was there on site, it was more involved because of geographical proximity, there were a whole group of other churches that were invited to give input and support and to involve themselves in the work. Now, on the other hand, there was one congregation that ran that student center, and they were encouraged many times to involve other area churches. They refused. Why? They wanted to control what was taught. And so what? Year after year after year after year after year, handful of students, none of which were kept. None of which were kept. And it's a problem. Listen, the one knows that a great source of your recruiting students, of support if you need funds to do something, participation, is out there with the churches. If you don't involve the area churches, they're not going to encourage their students to be a part when they leave home and go to college. And if invite them to support, invite them to be involved. And I don't know why this has been such a big problem, to be honest with you, but it's no mystery to me why more students don't leave school with the intention of getting involved in a student center, because they're not involved on the other end, and the churches aren't supportive on the other end. And quite often, that's not their fault. It's the fault of the church that's in the area. And we've got to see our way past that. To me, that was one of the geniuses of the student center. They would have events for area youth groups regularly in the facility to get them in that building, to get them to know university students now, and they leave and they come and they plan to be involved. And if a congregation is supportive of a ministry, they will promote the ministry. Well, all of this to say, I sort of have a call in five, six, or seven parts that I'd like to sum this up and bring it to you. And I don't know whether we are set up to do questions and answers or not, but I'm sure open to that. First of all, I would say we cannot do this ministry, campus ministry, like we did the bus ministries years ago. We typically moved about 10 or 15 years behind the pack. We were afraid to be on the cutting edge of anything. And now, maybe because ICC has scared some people to death, we spend so much time giving qualifications about what they did and they don't do, we never emphasize what we do. And I would say, just do it. I heard that somewhere. Just do it. And I would attach to this number one, be open to learn from other people. I heard a lot of good stuff. I'm going to use that material. I'm going to do it. I'm going to use it. And be able to draw from the expertise of people, not even within our movement. Don't steal their material and don't give them credit. That's the MO that I see a lot of times. Give them credit. Our philosophy of life as Christians is God can teach us from anybody and everything. If he can speak through a donkey, surely he can speak through a Methodist. Be open. Give credit. Implement. Where I come from, where I went to do my doctoral work, Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, they have a whole program of campus ministry. We need to study that. And you know, it was this way when I was in campus work. You had to have an MDiv to be a Baptist Student Center director. And in that MDiv, they have a core classes geared to campus ministry. It's time that we study that. Because, their success is not only due to what I've said before, it's also due to their training. Number two, be relevant. It's not a sin to be relevant. It's not a sin to be interesting. Engage people on the basis of their life situations. If our goal is for the gospel to influence their life situations, then we have to address them. We have to address them. That's the open door. People may not be interested in our philosophical constructs, but they are interested in their lives. We need to connect Jesus and the gospel to that, and that ought to drive any methodology. Third, we need to focus on creating communities of faith, creating cultures, subcultures, and that's a key. I notice as I think back, the one model that was very effective, that group was a culture in its own. It's a subculture of that community. They use specialized language that they only understand with each other. They have a shared experience, and they drew from the shared experience. They connected it to the larger lives of the church, and that's very important. We need to create communities of faith. This is not a Christian Science reading room. God's interest is in molding people and in changing communities, and so that's what we have to focus on. Fourth, look for the open doors in culture. I mentioned postmodernism earlier. However you feel about that, we would do well to read the works of Donald Miller and Brian McLaren, who are out there engaging postmodern people. I don't agree with everything in the books, but I'll tell you this, I've studied them and I've learned from them, and it's helped me in my outreach and dealing with unchurched people in a great way. When you talk about postmodernism, it's time for us to stop standing up and crucifying it over and over and again in these speeches. Listen, it is what it is. Maybe it shouldn't be that way, but we don't deal with the way things should be. We deal with the way things are. And if people think that way, use that as a starting place, as an open door through which to get to our message. And I want to tell you, strictly speaking, there are far more open doors in postmodernism than modernism. But now, epistemologically, we have to adapt because people will believe anything. Everything from spiritual strength being gained from crystals, rocks, a lady would carry around in a purse, or folk mythology, or whatever it is. But let's use the open doors and stop complaining about it. Next, let's be incarnational. The Word does need to go on and become flesh. We need to move away from mere proclamational models where we focus on just getting something said. We need to get something heard and received and followed. It's the implanted Word, the engrafted Word that we need to focus on. And so we need to be about lives and not just ideas. Next, I believe this is sixth, I would call us to rethink the structure of congregational involvement in our campus ministries. We need to involve more people for more congregations, for more communities. And whatever the structure is, we have got to involve more people. Involving more people is going to involve more students. And more students, more souls. Next, we've got to be about equipping, empowering, and involving people now. These aren't simply the leaders of the future. They can be great leaders now. And we need, if they are not going to make the connection to be Christian servants in this community now, they probably won't be when they leave either. It's sort of like church involvement. If they're really not involved in a congregation now, they probably won't be when they leave either, is the truth of the matter. And then finally, I would say, formal training is not a four-letter word, I don't think. I'd better need to count that up. I've used that expression before, and it turned out it was. But you know what I mean, barring from the cliche. When I mentioned Southwestern, and they have a whole curriculum geared to campus ministry, and the Southern Baptists and the Assemblies of God have very powerful student ministries. Maybe we need to be proactive in seeing how they do it and be willing to learn. And don't just grab it and swipe it and use it. Be willing to learn, implement that. And a whole lot of that comes from formal training. I have to believe, though I don't believe it's necessary anything else to do campus ministry to have a master's degree, I will say it makes a difference if you are studying cutting-edge material on how to reach university students as opposed to not. If those are the two options, I'm going to go with A every time. And so maybe there's a happy medium in our fellowship where we can learn and study and share. This workshop is a great start to doing that, but I would call us to emphasize some formal training if it's possible. I would emphasize us to be on the cutting edge of the research as far as how people are thinking, where people are open, how things are changing. What's it going to be 5 years from now? Well, at Southwestern, there's a class on that. A whole class for a whole semester. We need to engage that and do that. And I would say all of this needs to be for the glory of God. Because I want to tell you, I'm a person that, there's no doubt about it, I would not be a person of faith now without campus ministry. And in that campus ministry, I want to tell you, the thing that got me was not taking a correspondence course. It was not reading a sermon outline somebody mailed to me. It was about people interested in my life, people interested in me. And to create a community that was a safe one for me to study the Bible, to pray, to trust God, to experiment, to ask questions, to have questions answered, to dialogue with people, to share with people. And before I knew it, my life was caught up. God blessed me beyond what I knew even at the moment and put me in a trajectory that led me to wanting to give my life to His service. And I know there are many, many other people out there like that. And here in a school of 2,100, a group of 325, out of that 325, 63 went on to full-time ministry. Not to say that's the only ministry there is, but I want us to think about the potential out there. Do we have time for a few questions and answers, or do we not?
We're going to do an open forum, which you're welcome to sit on. Would that satisfy?
Well, that's fine. But I do encourage the communication. And one of the things I know that campus ministries that are thriving do, they create formal and informal networks of communication where you run things by each other, point each other to resources, and that's very important. When you leave here, I encourage you to stay in touch with each other. Very, very important. Thank you for your time. I've enjoyed being here.